listening to Inside MD Sports Radio. Here are your hosts, Mike Brody and Seth Hoffman.
Welcome, everybody, to the first edition of Inside MD Sports Radio. Not the first radio show we've done, but the first show under the new name, Inside MD Sports Radio. When we last did the show, it was called something else. So,
and it was basketball.
Yeah. The beginning, or it was a little bit after that. But the beginning of a new era today. And we're also joined by our first in-house guest, Patrick Stevens of the Washington Times. Patrick, thanks so much for joining us in studio today.
Thanks for having me over here.
Thanks for breaking the ground on the inaugural in-house guest. You guys are going to be doing most of the talking today since you've been, I guess, on the trail the last week. You guys were both down in North Carolina this past weekend at the ACC kickoff conference where you saw all the coaches, you saw some of the players, and you got kind of the vibe of what everybody's thinking going into this season. We still got a month from, over a month until the games begin, but camps get underway in the next week or so, and we got a lot to talk about. So we're going to start with the team that we're covering, Maryland. And you look at the roster, and I was looking at it today and or yesterday, and I said, well, these are a lot of guys that I haven't even heard of before, and a lot of guys who were inexperienced. But then, you know, I was looking at it a little bit today, and looking defensively, they got six seniors right now as starters on the depth chart. And it looks a little more promising than it did to me yesterday. Let's talk Maryland.
So you want to start with the defense first?
Let's start defense.
I think that's probably the biggest storyline, or one of the most, you know, important revelations of over the last year since Chris Kosh went back to Kansas State and they hired Don Brown, who's brought with him in the spring a lot of excitement because of his system in particular. It's an aggressive system. And there was a lot of talk, you know, during the spring about how the players have taken to that, and especially the secondary. I think it would be safe to start there if we're talking defense, because the secondary is how Don Brown's defense goes. How the secondary goes is how the defense goes, pretty much. And you know, if that's how it is, then he's in pretty good shape. Would you probably say that?
I think so. I think that when you look at that group as a whole, it's really one of the better secondaries that Maryland has had since Ralph Regan arrived. I think with the safeties in particular, I don't know if it's necessarily the best set of starters. I think that Dominique Foxworth-Denard Wilson combo was pretty good back, I guess it would have been in 03 or so. But I think you can most definitely point to you can certainly point to the depth there with McCullough, Skinner, Tate, Antoine Perez. And I meant to say Madu Williams and not Dominique Foxworth. But those four guys, that's a pretty good start. And obviously at cornerback, Nolan Carroll, pretty much the prototype for the sort of guy that you want to have in a scheme that has this much pressing, this much physicality involved. And certainly from talking to Nolan down in Greensboro, he's very excited to get the opportunity to actually play in this in a game rather than sort of the two-hand touch version that they played in the spring game, which was absolutely nothing like what they're really going to do. So certainly secondary heading into the season has to be something people are reasonably excited about around this program. I think that there's little question that is one of the obvious strengths of this team.
Don Brown is fortunate in that he comes in to a system, his system, you know, and they've recruited this way. You've seen this obviously in this class. They want big defensive backs and big safeties, guys that are in the 6'6" to 6'3" type range, and are pretty big, kind of run stopping guys who are able to blitz. And I think he's fortunate in that he comes into a situation where you have a guy like Nolan Carroll, you have Kenny Tate who's 6'4" at safety, you have a guy, you know, like Jamari McCullough and Terrell Skinner that are big guys. I think that's one reason why I think, you know, obviously a new system takes some time, but being fortunate enough to have those guys in place already kind of gives them a leg up. And I mean, even when you look last year, Jamari McCullough was, I would say, would you say defensive MVP or at least top three or so?
I would have put him behind Foku, right. but I think you could make a very good case for Jamari in that utility role being the second most valuable player on that defense last year.
You also, I mean, you have those safeties four deep across the two positions. I mean, four for both, two each at the positions. Nolan Carroll on the edge, Anthony Wiseman, and then you have, you know, Richard Taylor coming back for another, what is it, sixth year of Richard Taylor. That's never a bad thing because he's a good guy to have around as you are a Richard Taylor favorite. Would you say so? Yeah.
I would say that Richard Taylor, when healthy, has a pretty prominent spot on the blog.
Yes. Certainly. Yes. Him and Jamari McCullough are the secondary blog favorites.
But will he have a prominent spot on the field? We see him down here fourth on the cornerback depth chart. Will he ever get on the field this year?
The question with Richard, I think, is the same as it's been the last couple years, and that's simply being able to be healthy. I'm curious to see just how well the reconstruction job has taken for his knee. Really a hard luck guy who's had a couple of those ACL tears the last couple years. And it's certainly good for him to get a chance to try to finish things out right. I think that was the whole idea coming back last year and rehabbing as hard as he did to get back out there. And certainly, I think you have to look at that and figure that he does want to get that opportunity. Now, it wouldn't surprise me, given the uncertainty at that position, if he winds up by the opener being the second string corner on one of those sides.
Mm-hmm. And then you also have, you know, newer guys like Cam Chisholm, who kind of was talked about a lot last year but never really got onto the field. And then the other guy you have who's kind of generated a lot of talk this spring is Trenton Hughes. He's another one of those big-type physical corners. And one thing that this defense does, and I think this is why a lot of guys are excited about it, is it has a chance to create turnovers and create maybe touchdowns on defense. Which, when was the last time that happened? Was it the Aaron Henderson
interception? Yeah. Was the last touchdown on
defense. What is it about Don Brown's defense that allows for that, though?
Well, I don't think this is what he says and what a lot of guys says. It's because they're playing up close to the guys. I mean, they're able to push them off the line, and they're putting a lot of pressure instead of sitting back and letting kind of the offense dictate things.
Certainly, you know, you mentioned pressure. That's the huge thing here. He'll blitz safeties. He'll blitz corners. He'll blitz linebackers. He'll put seven defensive backs on the field and send three of them after the quarterback. He does not give the other team the chance to actually sit back and relax. I've talked to a lot of folks that have faced his schemes in the past, and they basically describe it as relentless from beginning to end, nonstop. It's basically the exact opposite of what Maryland has been over the last 3 years. And I know a lot of fans grew very, very weary of a very conservative defensive philosophy that was quite clearly doing everything it could to protect its corners from getting roasted. I mean, let's be serious. That's exactly what the crux of the idea was. And at this point, you've got a lot of guys that have played in that scheme for the last 3 years that have basically waited for somebody to hit them. It's basically been a sitting duck type approach. And in this instance, you're looking at a situation now where these guys are going after people and in a lot of ways have 3 years of pent-up aggression to go in there with it. Clearly, like I said, from talking to folks that have faced this, it's a scheme that works. It's a scheme that will probably work even better with better athletes. And with all respect to Massachusetts, which has had a very good program for the last decade and beyond, this is a better set of athletes that Brown's working with. So certainly, those sorts of approvals, those stamps of approval, mean a little bit just simply because if it worked there, and the CAA is an excellent league for the former 1AA, you got to think there's a chance, a pretty good chance, that there will be some measure of success against ACC opponents as well.
And even down at ACC Media Day, NC State coach Tom O'Brien, who coached at Boston College from 2010, was it 10, 9 or 10 years at Boston College, ending in last year when he moved to NC State, but he had faced Massachusetts twice while Don Brown was there, and he said, you know what, we're lucky that we have 2 months of video or 2 months of film before they face them. They face them, I believe, November 7th is the date. Then Maryland plays NC State, and Frank Spaziani, the coach at BC, said more or less the same thing about, you know, how unpredictable his type of system is. And I think, as you mentioned, it's just such a nice of a change of pace for the players in particular from a system that kind of just sat back and waited for people to hit them, as you said. And not that wasn't exactly the reason why. I mean, there were problems up front, and, you know, that was a big reason as well. But they had, you know, in the last 4 years, they haven't finished better than ninth in total defense in the ACC. Now, I assume that just because of who they bring back, that'll improve a little bit. Even if this defense might be more susceptible to giving up the big play, they're certainly going to create more big plays for their own selves. And I think that right there is the strength of the defense.
Are we all in agreement, though, that going into the season that the defense is in much better shape than the offense? Can we all agree on that?
I think you had to say yes just because the offensive line is such a big question mark.
Absolutely. I mean, the end of the day, if that offensive line doesn't stack up even to last year's group, then there's a legitimate possibility that it could turn into a first to 14 points wins type game. And that's not a situation that Maryland needs to have, even with a new defense. And perhaps in part because there's a new defense, there's probably going to be some sort of an adjustment period. If the line's fine, then it answers a lot of questions. But it's really hard to envision Chris Turner, Darrell Scott, guys like that, having great seasons if Turner doesn't have time to throw the ball, and B, if Scott doesn't have any room to actually run.
And before we get to the offense, I mean, when Maryland can't run the ball, they usually don't win. But we'll get to that when we look at the offense. Now, I know you wanted to get kind of the linebackers. It's another kind of question mark, not as big as the offensive line, but it's something that they're breaking in some new guys.
The new scheme is more of a typical 4-3 than what they have been playing. I mean, technically you could call what they've played a 4-3, but realistically you were talking about a rush linebacker position that had really been rather ineffective for the last four seasons. So a different look there makes a lot of sense. You look at the linebackers they have. They had of those top eight last year, five are gone. And so what you got left is you got Alex Wujak, and you've got Adrian Moten coming back after 2 years as basically a super sub. And then after that, there's some questions. You know, Ben Pooler's back, but where does he exactly fit in? It looks like Demetrius Hartsfield is going to be the guy at will linebacker. There's a lot of interesting possibilities elsewhere in this group. You look at Drew Gloucester at middle linebacker. Maryland suddenly very high on him at that position as opposed to where he was, which was tight end for his first few seasons. You got some freshman guys like Darren Drakeford and Avery Murray, and even a walk-on like a Hakeem Soule got a lot of praise during the spring. So a lot of options there, and I don't think Maryland's as bad off as the lost starts and the lost starters, guys like Foku and Philiston, would necessarily indicate.
I think Adrian Moten, given that he stays healthy and given that he gets all his downs in as, you know, starter-type minutes, starter-type plays, I think he has a chance to be the next Maryland linebacker who ends up earning all conference honors and going to the NFL just because he's such a, you know, a good playmaker in terms of just getting turnovers. And I mean, he was probably the only reason, or not the only reason, but he was one of the big reasons Maryland created, you know, a significant amount of turnovers last year, just because he was in, you know, just around the ball pretty much constantly. And that's kind of what he brings. And, you know, Wujak's just basically a tackle machine. You know, he'll get his 100 tackles this year, assuming he stays healthy. And then you look at Hartsfield, who's one of the brighter guys just from talking to him on the defense. I think he kind of really gets it. And they like his size for one, and they like his, you know, ability. He hasn't really played that much, but you know, they certainly like, you know, what he brings.
One of the things you mentioned how bright Hartsfield is. Mm-hmm. It's really striking the number of really smart guys they have on that defense. Guys like Carroll, guys like Moten, who might have as good a football IQ as anybody on the team. Hartsfield, Travis Ivey, when we get to the line, we can talk about him a little bit. Those are just guys that spring to mind. Jamari McCullough, another guy that basically was able to get by on guile as much as anything else last year just because he was savvy enough to take advantage of situations. So I think that can't be understated, just how significant that is, that a guy like a Moten, for example, is able to maximize what he has simply because he's smart enough to do it.
I think I'll make a bold prediction that Moten ends up, you know, close to the all-conference team because of the stats he'll rack up, because he'll be blitzing a lot for one, so he'll get a decent amount of sacks. He'll have his fumble recoveries and such like that, interceptions, those come in a couple, but he'll rack up a lot of tackles for loss just because he'll always be coming off the edge, and I think that really suits his game.
I think we could see a season out of him sort of like what we saw out of Clint Sintem from Virginia. Maybe not quite as good, but loyal readers of the blog might know that I am a big Clint Sintem fan. Guy was an excellent college player, and I think Moton could have a very similar type season, even if it's not necessarily in the same scheme.
All right, so we'll move down to the front four now. And I guess for the first time in a while, it actually is a front four, at least based on what we're told Don Brown's scheme will look like. Jared Harrell and Derek Drummond are currently penciled in as the DNs. Is there any debate there as far as those two guys? Or
I think it's safe to say that they'll start there. I mean, you never know during camp. But would you say that's safe?
I think that sounds about right. I think you could see Kabongo move in and maybe have a shot at that job. But really, you look at the anchor position, the end that lines up opposite the tight end. Harrell's really the only guy there with any sort of demonstrable experience with Deej Gault behind him. I think those guys have combined to play in 22 games or something like that in their career. So that's certainly a question mark going into the season. And then on the other side, Drummond's a guy that only got on the field once, Trey Covington got hurt and Rick Costa got arrested last year. So Drummond is clearly untested. Kabongo, somebody that could fill in there. I'm sure that they want to redshirt Deonte Arnett, but, watching that guy, just even walking around the complex in the spring, that is a guy that is, when he fills in terms of muscle, is going to be a pretty impressive guy, already a very big guy. So I think that there's some questions there, maybe not so much as to who starts, but just what sort of production can they get out of those guys.
Now we're so used to the Leo position, and I see here it says anchor for Jared Harrell. Is there anything in that position that's aside from normal defensive end?
I don't know the definitive answer. I asked
Don Brown about that back in the spring, and he basically said the difference was that guy lined up opposite the tight end. So think of him as the strong side defensive end, if you want to think of it like that.
All right, and then we pinch down the line here. We look at the two tackles currently, A.J. Francis and Travis Ivey. Travis Ivey, returning starter. A.J. Francis, a redshirt freshman, and holding Deion Armstrong's spot for now. What's the latest on Armstrong and what's the rotation look like at the tackle position?
Well, Armstrong was one of the things that Ralph Friedgen got asked about on Monday down in Greensboro. Basically, it's sort of a holding pattern. Armstrong has one more class that he needs to pass. He's taking it in the second summer session. And Friedgen said he was hopeful that he would know the guy's status by August 10th when camp begins. Wasn't sure if he would. So this is certainly the one potential attrition issue that really follows this team into August, and it could make a substantial difference. I mean, you look at that situation. If you have Francis, Armstrong, and Ivy, you've got three pretty solid tackles, three 300-pounders in there to clog up the middle, and certainly what you saw out of Deion Armstrong toward the end of last season was very promising, and Travis Ivy is a guy. I asked Nolan Carroll a couple guys to keep an eye on, that maybe weren't getting that much buzz. One of the guys he mentioned was Travis Ivey, Terrell Skinner, the safety being the other. So if they have three of those guys, they're in much better shape than if they only have two. And really, what's beyond those guys is completely untested. So Armstrong's return would clearly be a very, very valuable, almost a valuable addition in August, given what everyone's expecting right now.
And I'm still unsure how they'll know by August 10th if the summer session doesn't end until, I believe it's 11 days after that, or roughly that much. But we'll see if he ends up coming on the field. Obviously, it's a big thing considering how well he played at the end of last year. But I think you have to say that, as you mentioned, Ivy's probably been the most talked about guy on the line. And he is a guy, when he came in, I mean, he played basketball in high school a lot. I mean, he was a completely completely raw type of defensive tackle, and they knew it was going to take a few years for him to really get it. I mean, he's gigantic, for one. He has great feet from his basketball days. He's agile, and those are the kind of things you want to see, and I think it's finally come to this point that this could be his breakout year.
There's a little bit of Dre Moore to the guy, to be perfectly honest, and Dre, another blog favorite from over the years. A guy that really, I think his problems early in his career were as much maturity-wise as anything else, whereas I think with Ivy it was just a matter of developing into a good player. But there are some similarities there, and really that's, you know, when you think about it, I think Dre was probably the one really good tackle that they've had maybe since Randy Starks. And so to be able to be sitting here talking about Ivy and potentially Armstrong and Francis, obviously a guy people are very high on, I mean, this might be the best tackle tandem that Maryland has had, maybe even since the Randy Starks-Charles Hill combination in Friesian's first season.
And A.J. Francis is a guy, I think, Friesian mentioned down in Greensboro that, I mean, he's considered moving him to guard on offense to help there a little bit because he's such a, you know, good athlete and can play both ways. And you know, but as you said, those three guys right there, if Francis comes along, if he's as good as people saying they are, then that could be a big time strength for them. And that's something they haven't had in a while. Somebody who could really get to the quarterback from inside the defensive line.
You were saying that Fridge said that A.J. Francis could potentially switch from defense to offense. We'll do that ourselves right now. We'll switch from defense to offense on the depth chart here. And there's certainly a lot more in doubt, I guess you could say, on the offensive side, particularly on the offensive line. And you go down the list here. You were circling some of these position battles for me. You guys are in agreement that Bruce Campbell, left tackle, Costa at center, and Justin Lewis at right guard are all pretty secure in their spots right now.
Campbell and Costa are locks at their spot. I think Justin Lewis is pretty safe, would you say?
I think that of those other three positions that are up for grabs, that Justin Lewis probably has a substantially larger lead heading into camp than the other guys. I mean, I think it's possible that something unexpected could happen there. I mean, this is a redshirt freshman, but it's also a guy that Friesian frequently talked about thinking of using last year as a true freshman, and he was able to resist that urge in large part because he did have so many older players to work with. So I would say that in all likelihood, you'll see Justin Lewis starting at right guard come September.
And you look at the two, I guess, potential position battles here: left guard Andrew Ganella and Lamar Young, right tackle Paul Pinneger, R.J. Dill. How close are those guys now? Does anybody have a leg up in either of those battles?
I think if you were talking about left guard right now, if they had to play a game tomorrow, would you say Andrew Ganella would be there?
I think it would probably be Ganella if the game was played tomorrow. I think that's a guy that really drew a lot of praise from Friesian throughout the spring, a walk-on that has really gotten a lot of attention for the way he's been able to consistently play. And even going back to last season, you know, it seemed like every other week we were hearing about, you know, Ganella's playing pretty well. So, you know, I think that that's somebody that they've had their eye on here for a little while, and certainly that's plausible that he would be the starter. Now, the question you have is you're sitting here talking about a walk-on. Now, at the same time, Ganella's 6'6" and 305 pounds. Right. I mean, this is not somebody that does not, you know, pass the eyeball test. This is a guy that could turn out to be just one of those sleepers that they found. Sometimes you see all these walk-ons and you say, oh, well, it's a concern. Now, obviously, when there's a lot of them, perhaps like on defense last year, that's a little bit of a concern. But look at a guy like Afoku on defense that was able to thrive as much as he did. Would not be a surprise at all if Ganella turned out to be a little bit of a surprise for these guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, offensive line is one of those positions that is almost a complete recruiting crapshoot, if you want to say. I mean, outside your complete blue chip guys like a Bruce Campbell, I mean, it's pretty much up for grabs.
Well, let's look at the class that Maryland brought in 3 years ago now, I guess, all right? Joe Fiella has transferred to Stony Brook. Mm-hmm. B. Arthur Johnson has flunked out. Stephen St. John can't stay healthy. Tyler Bowen hasn't been healthy. You know, Lamar Young has played sparingly. Maurice Hampton has played sparingly. And how many of those guys will legitimately have a chance to contribute this season? Now, Campbell was part of that group as well, coming in out of prep school. But you're absolutely right. It's pure guesswork as to which of those guys are, A, have the talent to be able to pan out, and B, have the work ethic to be able to pan out.
Mm-hmm. And consistently, Tom Bratton said this, the offensive line coach, and you look around just other schools in particular, and everybody says, you know, it's by far, not by far, but I mean, with good margin, that's the toughest position to recruit. And I think you're seeing that obviously with so many positions up for grabs this coming fall. They just don't know until a couple years down the road who's going to actually mature physically enough, who's going to mature mentally enough. That's maybe the bigger step, and who's going to work hard enough to be able to grab a starting spot. And when we talk about another walk-on, another guy that kind of like Ganella, who just came in and kept getting talked about, Paul Pinneger, not the Fresno State quarterback. This is another Paul Pinneger. If there was a game tomorrow, I think he would be the starter right tackle over R.J. Dill, who had a good spring. I don't know if he had a great spring. He also had an arm injury as well. I think that he's fully recovered from that. But it's another position where, he's kind of shuffled along the line, and they need him at right tackle, and he's going to have to play there. He might not start, but he'll definitely have to play there, maybe other positions during the year.
Yeah, right tackle is a spot where you got a lot of guys that could fill in there, but there's all sorts of questions about all of them. I mean, Pinneger is a guy that's been a really good organizational guy, a guy that, you mentioned Tom Bratton constantly praising him for how hard he's worked. You remember back to that North Carolina game 2 years ago where they were in a bad way at left tackle with Burley hurting and Campbell hurting, and he wound up playing some of that game. At the same time, Paul Pinneger's 6'4", 280, and that's small for a right tackle at this level. You look at an R.J. Dill. Are you willing to entrust a redshirt freshman with that sort of job? You look at a Tyler Bowen, clearly another guy who passes the eyeball test in spades. But can he stay healthy? I mean, I think he has his very own walking boot. I mean, I think that they just have one on a shelf separate just for him. So all three of those guys all have a chance to be a big part of that tackle rotation, or even just win the job outright. But I'm not so sure you can go into this season thinking any of them will definitely get the job done, because you just don't know.
Well, two more things before we move on that I wanted to touch on. One is that Maryland lost out of last year's group, and I believe I got this close to right, but out of the guys that left, seniors or whatever, they lost 115 starts. Does that sound about right?
It sounds like it's in the right ballpark.
Right, I added that up quickly in Greensboro. It's in that ballpark, though. But as you saw last year, I mean, all those starts didn't really do much for Maryland. I mean, they struggled. That was the most disappointing unit, I think it's pretty safe to say. So is that overrated in terms of, losing amount of starts? And just in terms of when you look from one year to another in general, I mean, obviously you could look at guys separately, like losing a Moses Foku hurts more than losing maybe two offensive linemen. Do you think it's safe to say, if you just look at starters lost and starters coming back, you have to look deeper?
I think you do. I mean, people talk all about experience, but there's bad experience too. Yeah. I mean, you can keep sending the same player out 4 years in a row and start him at the same position, and if he doesn't get any more productive, then all right, then you've just got a black hole for 4 years. And Maryland's seen that happen in the recent past.
Yes.
So you look at that, I think you almost have to evaluate it spot by spot by spot. So you got Campbell, who comes back. Left tackle should be modestly improved. You figure he's going to be a little bit better. Jamie Thomas against Ganella or Lamar Young. I mean, I think that's a downgrade.
Yeah.
Jamie Thomas, I think, quietly had a solid enough year. I don't think he was the problem with that bunch. Center, you're going from Edwin Williams, who was very good, to Phil Costa, who I think is actually going to be a better fit. Even talking to him, he basically said, look, I'm a smaller guy for an offensive lineman, probably a better fit at center, plus sort of the quarterback of the line there too, really in the middle being able to do a lot of stuff. You look at right guard, and certainly Justin Lewis against what Costa and Jack Griffin were able to do last year, maybe that isn't such a big difference. And then right tackle, I think we can agree, was probably the most disappointing spot last year with Dane Randolph and Scott Burley. So maybe it very well may be the weakest spot this year. So you break it down like that, and maybe things aren't quite as bad as you tended to think, just simply because, they lost a lot of experience, but what good did it do them last year when they were rushing for negative yardage against Virginia Tech and Boston College?
And that's the next thing I was going to go to real quickly before we move on to the next position. When Maryland, and I mentioned this when we were talking about defense, but when Maryland can't run the ball, I mean, it's pretty much hopeless for them in terms of on offense. You know, James Franklin has come in and he said, you know what, I'll pass the ball 60 times a game if I have to, or I'll run it 60 times a game if I have to. But Maryland has, even we saw this last year, Maryland had always been a team that, and they're one of the last teams, I guess, in the ACC and that you see in big-time college football that really kind of just runs it right at you and tries to, you know, go downhill. I believe this was a quote from another coach in the Phil Steele magazine. It's like, you know, they're one of the last teams that just actually comes at you. And we've seen that if they have to set up the run pretty much to throw the ball well. And when that happens, they have a lot of success. But when you have Chris Turner throwing the ball 35, 40 times a game, that usually does not signal something good.
No, I mean, Maryland and Boston College, those are the two power teams that are really left. True power teams. I'm not counting Georgia Tech in that mix because that's their own animal altogether. But you look at Maryland. The Virginia Tech game is a great example. They just did not know what the heck to do at that point. They were completely lost. You look at Virginia. They were completely lost. At least against Boston College, when it was clear that they weren't going to be able to run against those two big tackles, that they gave up on it pretty quickly and just went back to it sparingly otherwise and said, all right, well, let's get 350 yards through the air because that's where things are. But typically, Maryland isn't going to come to that conclusion very quickly simply because they are so dedicated to running the ball. And as a result, I think you're absolutely right. You look at, you know, I did a chart the other day at Darrell Scott's production last year against non-conference opponents. You know, he was averaging well over 100 yards a game. In the ACC wins that he played in, he was averaging about 90 yards a game. And in the four ACC losses, he averaged somewhere around 37, 38 yards a game. I mean, it's right there.
It's pretty telling.
The numbers pretty much speak for themselves.
Darrell Scott and a couple of the other guys are very dependent on how these offensive line battles shake out. And Seth, you were telling me yesterday that Morgan Green, the coaches are very high on him right now, and he might actually hop ahead of David Meggett as the number two back. Talk a bit about the rotation as far as those three guys.
Well, I think we'll start with Morgan Green. I mean, Darrell's pretty much entrenched in the first spot, and we'll talk about him a little bit. But Morgan Green is somebody who last summer camp, last fall camp, he got hurt, kind of faded away as David Meggett kind of rose up and took hold of that number two spot. But then comes spring when he was healthy again, and obviously health is a big issue for all these guys and will continue to be for Morgan Green. He came up. I think he started to realize that, you know what, this is it. This is now or never for me. And, you know, I'm healthy and I'm just gonna run hard and just go. And I think he realized that in the spring and it showed, to the coaches. They really took notice of him, especially Ralph. He was a big fan of, Morgan Green's spring. And I think you would say right now he's the number two guy. Obviously all three will get touches in some form, but should Darrell Scott get hurt, and you know, his track record is that he's, you know, a couple games he gets knocked up. Morgan Green, I think he's a bigger guy, and I think he's, you know, somebody who could really kind of, depending on the offensive line again, but he's somebody who could really come on this fall.
Yeah, if the offensive line isn't very good, then their best bet is going to be sending one of their wrecking balls up the middle and hoping they get 3 yards. Morgan Green's 5'11", 220. All right, that's a pretty big guy. In fact, he told me during the spring he was working more on trying to be flexible and agile and stuff. And he's like, I'm already the strongest guy on the team. I don't need any of that. You know, I think that, you know, to kind of build off what you're saying, Morgan Green kind of has reached the fork in the road. I mean, Steve Slayton's already gone. I mean, I hate to keep bringing that up, but I mean, that's the comparison until either his career ends or he's able to thrive. You know, on one end of the fork, you see Bruce Perry. On the other end of the fork, you see J.P. Humber. All right? There are ways to look at this here where basically Green can become still a very valuable and memorable back for Maryland. I mean, he's got 2 years left to do it. Or he could just fade away into oblivion as a guy who maybe gets four carries against Temple his senior year. So that's pretty much what they're looking at right now. And I do think that Green and Meggett both are going to get their chances throughout this season. If the offensive line, especially early, doesn't come together, there's a very real chance that those guys are going to turn out to be just as valuable as Darrell Scott.
And then I mean, Green has 2 years left, but then you get Caleb Porzel in there and DJ Adams, who's similar to Green in that he's a between the tackles guy. So You know, it's not going to get any easier his senior year, if, you know, even with Terrell coming back as well and Meggett. So you have four other guys that are were highly recruited or played a lot the years before.
I don't think their blocking back needs much discussion. Probably the most stable guy on the offensive unit, Corey Jackson.
Do you think he warrants some discussion?
I think he absolutely warrants some discussion.
You're overruled. You've been overruled.
Because Corey Jackson might be the most valuable player on that offense. You look at when he played last year and played well, which was basically up until they went to Virginia Tech. That offense was going pretty well at that point. He barely played against Virginia Tech, and it went nowhere. He clearly wasn't 100% the rest of November, and the offense didn't do very much. I mean, they scored 17 points and beat North Carolina, but so what? They did nothing against Florida State, and they couldn't run against Boston College. After a little bit of rest, go to the bowl game, everybody's running wild, and Corey Jackson's blowing up linebackers. The importance of this guy cannot be understated. And there might be a greater drop-off, maybe other than quarterback, from Corey Jackson to whoever's behind him, be it Taylor Watson or Haroon Brown, than just about anywhere else on this roster. Maryland needs Corey Jackson to have a great senior season, because effectively he's the sixth offensive lineman. And if you look at it like that, then they've got three pretty good linemen coming back, a sort of question mark, and then two question marks. And that doesn't look quite as bad as how we ran that down things before.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, he is, as we talked about, you know, Maryland is one of the last teams that will run it down, you know, your throat. And Jackson is one of the actual true fullbacks still around, you know, other than Georgia Tech, who still use it in their option. Yeah, but, I mean, his importance, I mean, I can't really add much to what you said, but when he goes, you know, things go well. When he's not healthy, even though he'll play anyways, and he'll play through pretty much anything. But when he's not going well, I mean, that's such an integral part of how they run the ball, because they're not, you know, they always kind of have the eye form, more of a pro set. And, you know, that's why he's important, and that's where he's important. And as you said, I mean, behind him, there's nothing, you know, none of those guys have really, you know, come up and caught anybody. Even when Corey Jackson was out during the spring, none of those guys really did anything that impressed the coaches enough to say that they could be the next guy, even though Haroon Brown has played in the past. So, yeah, I think that might be one of the more underrated critical positions heading into the fall.
All right, well, back to the position battles. We go to the tight end spot, and there's a couple different tight end positions listed here, I guess, depending on the formation they throw out there. We have Tommy Galton, Lansford Watson battling for one of the tight end spots, and Matt Furstenberg is I guess, comfortable at the other one? What exactly is Matt Furstenberg's position?
It's more of an H-back type position as much as anything else, and they really didn't have one of them last year. Think of him as sort of the next coming of Jason Good, or at least what they hope is the next coming of Jason Good would probably be more accurate, since realistically I don't think any of us know how well Furstenberg's going to fit into this offense, since he basically only played last year on the kickoff return team for the first two games. So you're looking at him and Devontae Campbell there. It's tough to say, just because they didn't use the position last year, how much they might actually use it this year. So that's sort of an interesting wrinkle. And on the other side, you know, if they're in a passing situation, it's probably a good bet that Lansford Watson will be in there. If they're in a running situation, I think there's a pretty good chance Tommy Galt's going to be in there. He's a guy that has played on, you know, the field goal unit and has played on that goal line offense as an extra tight end. So I would say those are both probably going to be split situations, and I'm not so sure that we're going to see tight end be quite as valuable a spot in the Maryland offense this year as it's been with guys like Vernon Davis, Joey Hanos, and even Dan Gronkowski last year.
You figure it'll probably be a position that, depending on the offensive line, helps block more.
I think so. I think that you're looking for help at that point, and it would not be shocking at all. If we saw the tight end lined up on the right side, maybe a little bit more than lined up on the left side.